Well, as we've mentioned a few times already, and as you well know, today is Earth Day, and the country and the world can thank Wisconsin for Gaylord Nelson's work to establish that commemoration. We're going to take a look now at how farmers are really stewards of the land and how that fits into the commitment to the care of the environment that Earth Day represents. Poet and writer Sarah DeLuca grew up on a dairy and sheep farm in Polk County, Wisconsin, and she's the author of a wonderful memoir, Dancing the Cows Home, and the poetry collection, Shearing Time. And her most recent book is The Crops Look Good, News from a Midwestern Family Farm. And Sarah, it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really delighted to be on your show.
Well, you know, as here we are, and we're talking to you from a spot that has a Gaylord Nelson connection here on this Earth Day. You are in Turtle Lake, are you not?
Yes, I'm visiting my sister in Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, and we're just about 15 miles from Clear Lake, where Gaylord Nelson grew up.
Yeah, I think that when people think of Earth Day, it's often images of the Amazon forest or other equally important but distant landscapes and environments, really. But as someone who grew up on a Wisconsin family farm, does Earth Day have a different feel for you?
Well, I certainly grew up during a time when we were very connected to the land. And, you know, the whole life revolved around the weather and nature and what was happening with the crops, and that's where the title from my book comes from. But my father was a very environmentally minded man, and he resisted a lot of the modern chemicals and, you know, herbicides and pesticides that were being used post-war, you know, in the 1950s. Yeah. That's when it really started big time with all of those modern methods, and he resisted that as long as he could. But, of course, to keep up with things economically, you kind of got dragged into that. So, but, yes, we were very, we loved our land. We had lakes, woods, a lot of natural beauty on this farm, and later moved to a flatter, more open place, and he never loved that because he missed the wild places. Yeah.
Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in, by the way, before I forget about it. And I know I'm going to get lost in conversation with you, so let me do that now.
Mm-hmm.
As you're listening to our conversation here with Sarah DeLuca, maybe you have something to add. Maybe you're from a family farm. What lessons and values did you learn about caring for the land as a result of it? What's changed on the farm in your mind? I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And your book, I really enjoyed your book. It's set in a time, well, give the background on this book, because I really think it's interesting, because it's really, with some good writing by you to tie things together, it's a series of letters that Margaret Williamson received primarily from her mother. And her mother, you know, I looked at that name many times and wondered, is it Olava?
Olava.
Olava.
Hmm?
I wondered, but Olava was a rode regularly.
Yes, she did. And the sisters, her daughters, she had four daughters, they wrote to each other as well. Because Margaret, at the age of 19, went away to Minneapolis to work in the city. And because in those days, you just didn't drive back and forth. It's only 60 or 65 miles from where they live. But, you know, that was a big trip. And telephones were expensive, so you wrote these letters. And so that's when the letters started, 1923, when Margaret went away from home. And my own mother, who was quite a bit younger, age 7 at that time, started writing to her sister, and of course Mother Olava was writing, and that's where my letter collection begins. And I have letters from 1923 up through 1956 included in this book, so it takes you through some pretty interesting times.
Boy, it sure does. Mm-hmm. How many letters did you have in total?
Oh, there were hundreds. It took me,
wow.
And of course I could only use a fraction of
sure.
them, really. And that selection process was very difficult because I just found them all interesting, but to give the book some shape and theme, you know, mainly connected with the farming, I had to be very selective. These were boxes of letters that Margaret saved for 4 decades.
That's amazing. And it took you were given those letters, as I recall from just the early part of your book, you mentioned that you really held on to them a long time before you did anything with them.
Yes, I did. Well, it took me a couple years to transcribe the material, and then really not knowing quite what to do with it, I made some false starts with my book. I would start over and, you know, just really struggled with it for a while, so I would put it away for years at a time. But when people say, how long did it take you to write this, I would have to say about 20 years.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, from start to finish.
Well, you're right. It tells such an interesting story about life on the farm from the 20s through into the 50s, well into the 50s. And there were a lot of changes that happened over that 30 or so, 35-year period. And that one of the things I really kind of like about the book is that sometimes people's memory is, you know, I can remember my grandmother talking about life on the farm, and I think, you know, she was pretty accurate. But having these letters that were written at the time,
yeah.
I think really gives you a more accurate, possibly.
Well, it's those small particulars that are so fascinating. And, you know, we tend to remember kind of generically, but to have the particulars of what a day was like and what a person's personal concerns and worries were, and this is not a real feel-good book all the way. There's a lot of tragedy, a lot of real struggle here, and that's real. That's what life was. And this is history written as it was being lived, and that to me is what makes it unique.
Yeah, and also it's really nice to have your your sort of writing to tie things together, and that must have taken a little bit of work too.
Yes, I think that was the hardest part. I mean, these people were good writers. They just
yes.
spoke their minds very freely and directly because they were, you know, very close with each other emotionally. So that part just came out beautifully. Thoreau has a lovely quote, when a writer has something to say, it falls from the pen as directly as a stone falls to the ground. And that's the way they wrote. But for me, to try to be the narrator here and figure out a narrative voice that would work and, you know, be somewhat equal to the fine writing that they were doing, and not insert myself in this too much, because this isn't really my story. This is a story that predates my life, really. I mean, it starts in 1923, and it does go up to the 50s when I have memory of the 50s, but I did not want this to be my story. This is a story that represents the farming culture of the whole region. So a very good editor at Minnesota Historical Society Press advised me, take yourself out of here. Don't reflect directly on what they're saying. You know, let the reader participate, because we can all connect to these stories in our own way.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And I also agree with your point. I mean, there are some light moments in the book, mm-hmm. but there are also some pretty tough moments in the book too. And that, to me, I mean, that's what it's real.
Mm-hmm.
It's real. I mean, you write about And we probably aren't going to have a lot of time to talk about this at the moment, but I mean, you write, or you didn't write, the earlier letters where one mentioned a young girl who died after picking up a blasting cap for dynamite and sticking it in her pocket. Well, how in the world, you know, if something like that happened in this day and age, we would really be appalled, and people were certainly appalled at that time and very sad about it. And we'll pick up on that conference or on that conversation. We need to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guest Sarah DeLuca. You stay with us. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we visit with writer and poet Sarah DeLuca. Sarah grew up on a dairy and sheep farm in Polk County, Wisconsin, and she's the author of the memoir Dancing the Cows Home and the poetry collection Shearing Time. And her most recent book is The Crops Look Good, News from a Midwestern Family Farm. And it's a really interesting book. And just to read a little bit from the sort of the book jacket part of it, it goes, when Margaret Williamson left her family's rural Wisconsin farm to work in Minneapolis in 1923, her mother, Olava, wrote regularly with updates about daily activities. And it was the laundry, the bread baking, the plowing, the planting, the harvesting. And sometimes she's enclosed a note from Helen, 7-year-old Helen, who reported on school and shenanigans and how she longed to see Margaret again. So there were decades of stories here, 3 decades of stories and of letters, I should say. And there were many, many, many of those letters, and Sarah took some of them. She couldn't use them all, and put together a book. And the book, again, is titled The Crops Look Good, News from a Midwestern Family Farm. And as we were talking before the news break, you know, there's a lot of humor in the book, but there's also, I mean, this is real life, and we were talking just before the break about a young girl who died after picking up a blasting cap for dynamite, and she put it in her pocket, and it exploded. And Sarah, thank you again so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
And what about that particular? You know, one of the things I thought about was, in times like that time, when someone dies or when there's a tragedy, people kind of pull together, don't they?
They surely do, and I think it's still true today. But in these days, the communities were so interconnected, and of course small farming communities, 600-700 people that would be supporting the agricultural industries all around them, and everyone knew each other, and, you know, a tragedy like that affected the whole area very deeply.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sherry in Wales has something. I think it kind of goes along with at least the course of your book. Sherry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I also grew up on a small, very small family farm. My father raised beef cattle, and in the 50s and 60s, and we were not fortunate enough that we could survive just on that. My dad had to also work off of the farm. But it is a wonderful life. You do learn real life, as Larry was commenting. And I have kind of a funny story about our beef cattle, because when they would go off to market, my father would always tell us that the cow that was in our freezer, we, being children, named the cows, which is always a bad mistake when you're going to end up sending them to market.
Yes.
But we did. And so my father, being a wise man, would always tell us that the cow that was in our freezer was one of the mean cows.
Ah.
So we never felt guilty or bad about eating that particular animal. But I also wanted to comment on the fact that I think letter writing is such a lost art, and I can't wait to get this book and read the letters, because I think that is such a great form of storytelling.
Yes, I agree with you. I think we are not writing letters in this fashion anymore, not much. Long letters, detailed letters, and, you know, we communicate more broadly with all of our electronic devices, but not as deeply. And that's going to be a loss to history.
Exactly. There is so much history that was told in letters, and now I wonder where researchers will get some of that information.
Right. It's going to be a challenge to have the common life described in this kind of detail.
Yeah, absolutely. Sherry, thanks. That was a great story.
Thank you.
I love that story. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. So go ahead and post there if you'd like. Got a Facebook comment from Dean. Kind of goes, and certainly goes along with Earth Day. And his comment on Facebook is, as I spend my day planting seeds in my greenhouse, I reflect on this Earth Day, the importance of stewardship of our land under increased external pressures. Not caring for your environment is not an option.
I certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
And I hope we are seeing some increasing awareness of that, but it's coming along slowly, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Some of the letters in the 30s, a few of the letters had to do with problems on the farm during the Great Depression. And I remember one part where you were talking about wheat that sold, or in the letter, or I think it was you commenting, I think, that wheat sold for $3 a bushel in 1920 was selling for 30 cents a
yes.
bushel in 1932.
It was a drastic drop in prices, and I think the farm people, although they were probably better able to eat than some folks, but they suffered greatly. And I remember interviewing my uncles about this, and their memories of it were very sharp and still painful. To hear your animals bawling for lack of food, it was a terrible thing. They couldn't really afford to feed them, so of course some of these animals just had to be killed because they couldn't maintain the
and there were some tough times. I know within your family, people working and you know, not being paid for what the properly, and so it change a lot of how your family and probably all most farm families and other families too thought about things.
Oh, I think so. You know, they were always frugal, but everything was saved and recycled, and they became so frugal that even when times got better after the war, it just, you know, they couldn't let go of that and really learn how to spend a little for the luxuries.
No, I understand what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have more callers online. Rich just called in here in Burlington. Hi, Rich.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I haven't heard your whole program, but noticing it, you were talking about letter writing. I just retired. I'm a teacher. I was a teacher and probably still always will be. But just the people talk about the lack of civility, and I think our speed in which we can communicate now, whether or not text, email, and so forth, I think we've lost some of it by not having to sit and write a letter. I've gotten letters from parents a long time ago when I started teaching, but I've also recently noticed that, you know, some parents will send a message to me on their cell phones when, after they pick up their child from school or whatever. And very mm-hmm. often they were, there would be no greeting. There'd be no, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, Mr. whatever, my name or whatever. There was just immediate, short, to the point. And it takes me a while to sit and write a letter. And I would reply with some thought. But I just noticed that a lot of parents were just very used to quick and immediate, you know, sending me almost like a text message on an email. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of the coarsening of our civil discourse, is just the fact that we could write something quickly, send it off. And I'm pretty sure there's a number of letters that parents have sent that they wish they could take back because they did it in the heat of the moment, wrote it, sent it, and then thought about it. And once it's sent, it's gone.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rich, for calling. Sarah, a comment from you?
Yes, I think that makes a very good point. Because when you're sitting, you know, it takes a little time and reflection to write a good letter, and I think that was a very valued means of communication. And now, you know, you can hit that send button pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a little too easy. We don't put the thought into it. And the niceties are lost in that kind of communication. So,
I was thinking about the last time that I did extensive letter writing in my own experiences, and it was in probably around the middle 1980s when I spent a year at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And so I was there, and so. And we didn't, you know, we didn't quite have email going yet. And, you know, computers were just sort of just coming on the scene a bit. And so I wrote letters home, and I was by myself. So I often had a lot of time. and those turned out to be a lot of fun to write. And people would write back and say, oh, please send another letter. People enjoyed receiving them.
Oh, certainly. And they're wonderful to have later because your own memory, you think you're never going to forget some of these things, but details get lost quite easily. I have started each chapter in this book with a quotation, and one that I particularly like by Thackeray is, "There are 1,000 thoughts lying within a man that he does not know until he takes up a pen to write." And it's a kind of self-discovery as well as communication.
That is very well put. Anna in Appleton has a comment for you. Anna, hi, thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi, Anna, are you there?
Hello, I think you're thinking of Rana.
Oh, Rana, sorry.
Hi, Rana. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Rana. My college roommate from Eau Claire.
Sarah and I go back to UW Eau Claire a million years ago, and she has always been a wonderful writer. I have kept her letters over the years and her cards, and she has put her heart and soul into this book. Some of the themes that, Sarah, that I remember you talking about over the years was how tight your family was and being an identical twin, but also how poor it was on that farm way up north, and how you'd get attached to the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you talking, you know, about the harsh winters and the role of the Lutheran Church in the family background, your immediate family background and all. Wondering if you could expand on any of that.
Mm. All right. Thanks, Rana, for calling.
Thanks, Rana. When you say poor, you know, I guess I don't think of it that way because we were all pretty equal in that regard, and we did not feel poor. I mean, we worked harder than most people would want to work now, but we didn't really feel poor. I think it was a fairly equitable society, and that's what made it strong. And everyone helped each other if there was some dire need. The churches, of course, often played a big role in that, but it was a cohesive community. Now, someone driving through might not see that, but it really was there.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I grew up on a farm, and we really, my family had not very much money, let's put it that way. That's mm-hmm. the kind way to put it. But I never really felt like we were poor. I mean, it didn't even occur to me.
No, I think, you know, by today's standards, when I tell my grandchildren these stories, they say, oh, goodness, Grandma, you were so poor. Well, it's all relative, I suppose.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
We have more callers online. You can join in, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We're talking about writing. I think, you know, you cover these eras, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. And in the late 30s, going to, you know, when we're coming out of the, trying to get out of the Depression, the Federal Writers Project.
Mm-hmm.
Struck me as very interesting, and I had forgotten, I hadn't thought about that in a long, long time. Explain what that was.
Well, that was one of those alphabet soup agencies that they put a lot of resources into telling people's stories, interviewing, and giving writers work. Right now I'm looking for the page, and I'm not finding it, but it was... It ended up being a wonderful thing, not only to give writers some work, but to give us a lot of first-person history that we wouldn't have had otherwise.
Well, there were, I think it was in 1939, the government paid, it was something like 6,500 people. They got paid $20 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And their job was to go out and interview ordinary people about their life stories.
That's right.
So the government got into the arts in kind of in a big way. There were other, as you say, there were other artistic projects at that time that turned out to be really valuable for us today. And just looking back to what life was like.
Yes, I think that was a fine project that we are still benefiting from.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen in Central Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have so many memories when you started talking about letter writing and growing up on a dairy farm and the environment. I have, like, multiple connections to this conversation today. One of the things that really struck me when you were talking about letter writing and recording things, growing up on a small dairy farm, we would wait for the mailman, brothers and sisters and I, and we have a large front porch on the top of a hill, our house sat, and we'd watch for that mailman coming down the road, and we'd run down to the mailbox to get our letters, and my cousin Gail would write to me every week, and her mom, Aunt Sue, would write to my mom every week, and all of her sisters, and we'd always get letters, and we were anxiously read through those letters a couple of times and then write back to them, and it was just our way of having that connection and learning things about, you know, where each of us were living and things happening in our lives. And my dad and my mom also wrote letters before us kids were even born, when they were dating, and my dad was in World War II in the Navy. He would write my mom letters back and forth, and she would respond, of course. And all of his envelopes were etched with beautiful drawings. He would draw pictures all over the envelopes. And my mom saved all of those letters over the years in an old suitcase upstairs in the attic, and us kids would peek at them sometimes. We weren't allowed to read all the letters, but they were there, and my mom shared those for years with us. And I just...
Another wonderful memory, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. And the handwriting was beautiful. I mean, it was used so regularly, people just were fluent in their writing. And may I connect to something about Earth Day?
Yes, go right ahead.
Not directly connected to letters, but it has to do with growing up on the farm. We named our cows, too, Sheba, the white one with the red flashing eyes we were all afraid of. She chased us through swamps and chased us everywhere. My aunt would come out from the city to help out on the farm because she loved doing that when they would visit, and she would get mad if the boys weren't bringing the cows in soon enough at the end of the day for milking. And one time they weren't coming in fast enough, and she said to the two of them, you know, you boys, you need to get those cows in because they need to be milked. It's getting late. I'm going to go out there and get them myself. And she headed out to the pasture, and lo and behold, Sheba paid her a visit too, and she ended up running across the fence, sliding underneath the, running across the swamp and sliding under the fence. And from then on, she believed us.
We had a cow like that too back when I was a kid.
We all named, I think most farmers named their cows. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, you maybe had 20 or 30 instead of hundreds like these big farms do now. But my mother named her cows after the women in the Lutheran church choir.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, I really liked Karen's comments about saving the old letters and hanging onto them, and that's certainly something you did. I know my brother said, my brother has a letter from my dad, and my dad didn't write a lot of letters, but he said if the house was burning down and he had to run back in, the one thing that he would grab would be that letter.
Yes, I understand that. I would do the same.
Yeah, I'm certain you would, and I know you've put together, you have a wonderful book here, Sarah, and I hope it's doing well.
Well, I think so. It came out just a little before March 1st, and I have been just really enjoying connecting with a lot of people who are relating to the book or learning something, because this is ancient history to the young people. You know, the life has changed so much. And I have a lot of events coming up. This is I live in Georgia now, but this is my second trip to Wisconsin right now. And then in June, I'll be doing several events in the southern part of the state. So.
And you have a website we can go to for that? I think we have them up on my Facebook page, but...
The Minnesota Historical Society Press has a very nice website that features my book and all the events coming up. And there's also a reading guide for book clubs that I'm quite happy with. Very, very thoughtful questions about history and how things have changed, and questions about how childbearing attitudes have changed, which is just one
thing. And boy, we are totally out of time. This has been so much fun. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Sarah DeLuca, our guest, author of The Crops Look Good, News from a Midwestern Family Farm. A great show, a great book on this Earth Day. Thank you for listening. Stay with us.